so Tor Branches, free open source software. And the sole aim of Branches is to help you keep your Bitcoin. Bitcoin's decentralized. You should be custodying it. It doesn't matter how, whatever wallet, whatever custody setup you want, whatever model you choose. But with that, there's a lot of pitfalls that can happen, right? So you can think of your computing system as like layer upon layer. And each layer has vulnerabilities, like it or not. And so the first feature that we built was wallet verification. And so wallet verification just means making sure that your wallet is authentic from the author and not a fake wallet. Because what people do is they clone open source wallets like Sparrow, Ledger, and they purport to be the authentic Sparrow or Ledger, and they get people to download this, and then they rug pull them and take all of their money, and this is horrible. This is bad for Bitcoin adoption, and it's bad for the world.
Welcome to the Bitcoin Town & Co. podcast, where we interview entry-level to C-level executives about working in the Bitcoin industry. Learn about their interview process, what they do day-to-day at their Bitcoin job, and advice for current job seekers looking to work full-time in Bitcoin. Hope you enjoy. Hello, and welcome to the Bitcoin Town & Co. podcast. I'm your host, Eric Podwatchke, and today I'm joined by my friend, Keith Gardner, who is the founder of Branta. Thanks for joining me, Keith.
Thank you for having me, Eric.
Yeah, before we dive into Branta and your antivirus for Bitcoin, the software you're developing, I definitely want to learn some more about Keith and your professional career, too, before getting into the Bitcoin space. So can you walk us through exactly like maybe what you went to school for and what you've been doing professionally?
Yeah, for sure. So to really set the context for my background, I was born in the 90s and in America. And so growing up during this time, it struck me very early on, like how much regulation there was in every industry, for better or worse, and for both, really. And what struck me was that computer science and technology was the least regulated. And like, I kind of just got the gist early on that you could just write code and push it and really no government could do much about that. Enter Bitcoin later. But so that was a huge part of inspiring like my initial motivation to study programming. And then the other half I would attribute to Steve Jobs really and Joni Ive, and specifically like their design work. I felt like at the time, like their products were just beautiful and easy to use. And so, anyways, I went on to study computer science in university. And the early part of my career, I spent largely at Bloomberg in New York City, in London, a little bit in DC. And so there I worked on a number of teams programming professionally in mobile, front end, back end, web, kind of like all over the place. And so... Yeah, at some point along that journey, I found Bitcoin, and then that was the immediate focus from there on out.
Okay, cool. So working, you have a background in software development, engineering, also adding some more of the product side of things. And then where does Bitcoin come into your life? Like how long ago?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I bought my first Bitcoin. Honestly, I think I bought it flying to Iceland with a few of my friends. And during the flight, the price made us all money. Then I sold it for profit. And we came back and I didn't really pay attention to Bitcoin. This was 2017 in one of those jobs. Yeah. And so I was working, you know, I was busy doing stuff and I should have paid more attention. But then in 2020, like it really gripped me. And like all my friends, all my family know that I'm like completely obsessed with it. And like, I just view it as like Bitcoin just has me. Like it has me in its grips. And since 2020, I can't stop thinking about it and just kind of viewing the direction that the world is going to go in as we progress here.
So what was it in 2020 that really made you dive down the Bitcoin rabbit hole?
Oh gosh. Yeah, I don't know if I have a great answer for that. Honestly, I think the price action did some of it.
Yeah.
You know, like I would love to say like, oh, it was like this deep Austrian theory or it was like the early cypherpunk ethos. But probably what got me into it first was the price. And then from there, the more deeper philosophy came after.
Got it. Okay. And when did you realize that Bitcoin is not like the rest of these other alternative coins and it's something that you can actually build on and maybe even start a company on?
Yeah, that's another great question. So I have a personal philosophy on this, and it's that if you get stuck in altcoin land for more than like 30 days, this is a really bad signal.
Yeah.
And so like to me, it seems like the best of the best just kind of skip over altcoins pretty quickly. I'm not saying you cannot dabble, you cannot trade. I understand like the appetite for risk and gambling, and this is a different thing than sound money.
Yeah.
But I did not spend much time in altcoin land. Maybe like 1 month. I think I held a little bit of an altcoin, but I passed that pretty quickly.
Got it. Okay, yeah. I think nowadays that time, that gap between when you first start hearing about this, the space overall, until like figuring out Bitcoin only, that's really starting to narrow now. I remember when I got in like late 2017, it took me a while, honestly, to realize there's a difference between them and Bitcoin's the real one to actually care about. So hopefully as this next wave comes in as well, 2024, 2025, all the new Bitcoiners that come in can shorten that gap and they can, just continue down their Bitcoin journey.
Yeah, I mean, there's really, really smart people like looking at other chains, if we call them that.
Yeah.
But they're all very experimental. And the understanding that it's different from sound money, like, I think that's coming pretty quick to people now.
Right. Yeah, I remember like the Ethereum talking heads used to talk about Ethereum being sound money. I don't really see that anymore. So
no one is saying this.
Yeah, the truth's coming out here. The Bitcoin's the only one to really pay attention to. Cool. So before you decided to start Bronta, what were you doing professionally?
Yeah, I was crunching code. Crunching code at Bloomberg. My team was split between New York City and Switzerland. And so I live further south on the coast in the Carolinas. But yeah, I was traveling to New York City about once a month to be with the team. And yeah, we were building a portfolio analytics product for the Bloomberg terminal. So I'll leave it at that.
That's fine. And what was it? What was your why? Why did you decide to start a Bitcoin business?
Yeah, that's another good question. So I think there's a lot of ways that like any given human can contribute to kind of the arc of society and like human flourishing. And I think people naturally will fit into different roles. And so I've known about myself that I like starting things. I really, really enjoy starting things in the creative process, which is kind of funny to be in programming on the one hand. And so when I found Bitcoin, kind of the picture that I saw very early on was this metaphor to like Renaissance Italy, in fact. And immediately, like I knew the world was changing and was not going to stop changing. And so kind of the picture that I have in my head is like, we now have this Medici class, right? The Medicis were these bankers in early Italy using the florin. And it turns out like once you have really good money, you can have amazing things come from that. So the Medici family created banking and efficiency and sound money, right? From the florin. And then what came out of that was the Michelangelo, the Michelangelos of that era and the best artwork ever. And so the metaphor to Bitcoin here is like, this is actually happening now. It's happening in the US, it's happening in El Salvador, and a bunch of other places. And with this landscape, like you have this beautiful symmetry and this cooperation between, you know, the modern Medicis and the modern Michelangelos. And there's just so much, there's so much room to build. The canvas is very blank. It's very porous.
Yep.
And there is so much space right now for Bitcoin companies. So really what I started doing specifically was building on open source. And so maybe you know, but have you heard of UTX Oracle, Eric?
Rings a bell. I really don't know it too much.
Yeah, this is one of these Michelangelo type projects where it's this beautiful data visualization from this guy named Steve. I don't know where he works. I think he's in North Carolina, but UTX Oracle, I think .live is the website. And it's this data visualization of the UTXO set. And this guy derived the historical US dollar price based on purely on-chain data without any Oracle. So he kind of
I remember hearing Marty Ben has a podcast with him, I believe, from his past year.
He's been around a bit. And so he kind of solved like the historical Oracle problem. And he wrote this in Python. And what I originally started doing was looking at this and saying, this is amazing. So I decided to write this in Ruby, published it as a Ruby gem, made it multi-threaded, all this fancy tech stuff. And from that, I realized that, like, oh my God, Bronta. It popped right into my head that there are no guardrails today.
Yeah.
So there's no, the beautiful part about Bitcoin, about Nostr, about Lightning, is that this is open network, right? And so, you know, Jack Mallers is free to come on out of Chicago and build Strike. Jamie Dimon is free to come on out of New York or Miami, wherever, and build his company on Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
It's open. And so that's a feature, not a bug. But with that, when you swim in open waters, there's dangers, right? And so there's no guardrails for installing wallets, for making transactions, and a plethora of other items. Mm-hmm. And it just struck me. It struck me in my sleep one night that, like, hey, Bitcoiners need guardrails.
Yeah. And I remember the first time coming across Bronta, I had a light bulb moment myself. I was like, why is this not created yet? Like, why is it now taking till like 15 years after Bitcoin's been created to come up with this? So it's probably helpful for the audience to know, what exactly is Bronta and what problem are you solving for?
Yeah. So I'll try and speak specifically to the Bronta feature set here.
Okay.
So, yeah. So Core Bronta is free open source software. And the sole aim of Bronta is to help you keep your Bitcoin. Bitcoin's decentralized. You should be custodying it. It doesn't matter how, whatever wallet, whatever custody setup you want, whatever model you choose.
Mm.
But with that, there's a lot of pitfalls that can happen, right? So you can think of your computing system as like layer upon layer. And each layer has vulnerabilities, like it or not. And so the first feature that we built was wallet verification. And so wallet verification just means making sure that your wallet is authentic from the author and not a fake wallet. Because right. what people do is they clone open source wallets like Sparrow, Ledger, and they purport to be the authentic Sparrow or Ledger, and they get people to download this, and then they rug pull them and take all of their money, and this is horrible. This is bad yep. for Bitcoin adoption, and it's bad for the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's kind of like the first feature. And the second feature was helping with transactions. And just kind of giving you visibility into your clipboard at runtime to make sure that no malware is actually swapping your address
mm-hmm.
as you go to make a transaction. And I actually later found out that these two items are listed on bitcoin.org as threats. So that's cool that, you know, there's an alignment there.
Yeah. You've identified two huge threats, actually. And I just want to paint the picture here of like a possible scenario where your funds can get stolen. So I know there's a couple of years back, Ledger had their entire email list leaked. So a malicious actor could potentially get a hold of that list, send you a new Ledger in the mail that has this bad malicious software on it. If you decide to plug it in, then your funds could be easily taken. That, or it could even just be like desktop software, something you download from the internet, you think it's from the right place. Such as like Sparrow Desktop, a lot of people use for their wallets, and you just don't realize that there is a malicious part of the code there too. And it's kind of like a black box in my mind. So speaking as someone that's not like as technical, I really need something to easily check whether or not this software I'm using or this hardware device is legit. So that's where Bronta comes in. Can you explain exactly how the verification is done?
Hey guys, real quick, as a Bitcoin-focused recruiting firm, our goal at Bitcoin Talent Co. is to bring as many professionals into the Bitcoin industry as possible. Since we don't run ads, our one ask is to rate, review, and share this podcast with friends and family so more people can find this show. Thanks, and now back to the interview.
Yeah, absolutely. So probably for Bitcoiners, like the best way to explain this is that PGP is just a key scheme, much like Bitcoin is, where you have the asymmetry between your private key, which you keep to yourself, and the public key, which is known, used for verification.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, if you want to send value over the Bitcoin network, you sign the transaction and broadcast with your private key. And in building software, you can kind of think of this as before distributing your software, you should sign your software with your private key, which is PGP.
Mm-hmm.
And then all that software has the signature. And so people can validate. And so this will be a little more technical here for the audience, but So Bronte's business model is such that part of our stack will be open source and free, and part of it will be paid. And that kind of makes sense for the different problems that we're solving. Mm-hmm. But for the free portion, which includes the wallet verification, this is almost akin to a protocol level technology. As it evolves, and it's going to take time, we're not there yet. Mm-hmm. But this is probably what we're building towards. And so protocol level just means you can think of PGP as a protocol, Bluetooth, Bitcoin, NOS, or Lightning, which means that it's open, anybody can opt in, you can look at the design, you can propose changes. And so, yeah, if you think about software distribution, traditionally like the Apple App Store or the iOS App Store manages the authenticity for you. But on the web, dealing with open source software like Sparrow, if you go to that website, you'll see steps for like verifying the broadcast of that software, aka download. And the critical step that's manual right now is that the verification is not done by anybody until Bronte, right? So this is where you enter Bronte.
Yep.
And eventually, like, the end game of Bronte is to be free open source on every platform. So we're platform agnostic, wallet agnostic. And if you install any sort of software to watch public keys, to make transactions, to do coin join, Whirlpool, whatever you want, we will verify that for you in a trustless way.
Got it. Yeah, I did notice going through, I use a couple of different devices and software for my Bitcoin holdings. And I did realize that there's always that verification step.
Yeah.
In the instructions, which I've always skipped over. I always thought it was like not necessary. Until I now that I know more about Bitcoin, I realize how important that is and how malicious actors could steal your funds really easily if you're not doing that verification step. So where I wanted to go with this next is how can I or another user trust that Bronte is not malicious itself? I think I know the answer, but I want to hear it from you.
Yeah, no, that's a really, really good question. Trust is super hard. Like I said, you know, if you're on a computer right now, Windows or Mac, there's layer upon layer of technology that can be exploited. To answer specifically, so Bronte Core is open source.
Mm-hmm.
Means you can go look at the code. The community can audit the code as well. And we sign our binaries when we distribute them. So there is a little bit of a chicken and egg where, like, yeah, you probably should verify, like, the PGP key of Bronte anyways. But the beauty is you only do it once. And then as long as you trust Bronte, which you can look at the code, then for all of your wallets, you don't need to do this again. And the other part that maybe we didn't say explicitly was that Bronte does ongoing checks as well.
Hmm.
So you install Bronte once and then you get ongoing protection versus a one time only, right? So like if you install your wallet, but then malware comes along after the fact and changes your logic.
Yeah.
You're done, right? And so, yeah, to trust Bronte, you can look at the code. For the paid model, there's a kind of a different mechanism that we use. And it involves like making the client trusted, but the server is a little more hidden. And this is how like traditional open core models can work.
Yeah. Can you dive into that a little more actually? What's the difference between the free and paid tier?
Yeah, so we're kind of in stealth mode for the paid tier for now, as this is in development. Mm-hmm. So were you asking about like the open core versus the pro version?
Yeah.
Yeah, so open core, the vision is like platform agnostic, wallet agnostic, runs everywhere. And this is just to help people not lose their Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
I think the tech, like once a developer sees this, they can build it decently quickly. Like it's not that hard, but I think the idea is a little unique, and then executing is always not so simple. But yeah. So yeah, the free version will be everywhere, and the pro version, this is going to be a little more specific to the customer, and then there will be an enterprise spin on that as well.
Okay, got it. Cool. Well, I'm looking forward to maybe when you come out of stealth mode a little more, learning some more about it. What about the Bronte team? So as I think it's just you on the team, correct? Building this?
Yeah, it's I'm the solo founder. And so we've had a bit of help from others. We don't have anyone on formal payroll right now. we have had a lot of interest from engineers who want to come work on Bronta.
Yeah.
And a couple even contribute to the open source, which has been great. And so, yeah, like we're getting our funding all set up, and throughout the year, we'll be building out the team slowly.
Okay. Yeah, that's awesome, man. So you're very early on in a Bitcoin startup here. How are you thinking about, one, going and raising funds? So maybe there's someone listening right now that wants to start up a Bitcoin startup of their own, and they have no idea how to do that. How are you going about raising funds?
Yeah, yeah. This is a huge question. So I can definitely kind of talk to the people here who might want to start a Bitcoin company. And so like traditionally that probably looks like idea, MVP, get some market feedback. Mm-hmm. And with that, you have a couple of options, right? So you can do this on your nights and weekends. Cool. Something definitely may come out of that. You can exit your fiat job and you can self-fund. This is what I've been doing for about 3 months now. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy how the time gets compressed. Like when you come off of a paycheck in a white collar position and you're out in the open working Monday through Sunday until like 11 when your Wi-Fi shuts off.
You feel that fire.
You feel that fire. And so, yeah, I think risk appetite has a huge part to play here. So like what Bront is doing specifically though is we're self-funding and we're having intro conversations with venture capitalists in Bitcoin only, right? So we're not completely close to talking to more traditional like Y Combinator type accelerators or investors. But like the advantage of Bitcoin is that it's kind of a small community. Mm. And like, why would we not go that route? Like there's a number of websites on the internet that kind of list like which Bitcoin VCs there are. And these, I've found, these people very receptive to at minimum, like an intro conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. I could think of maybe three or four on top of my head now, which didn't exist. I don't think maybe last cycle. So the Bitcoin industry's really come a long way. Now there's support systems being put up for startup founders. That's great. So after you raised funds here, what were you thinking about in terms of hiring? What are maybe like the first two or three key hires you want to make?
Yeah, that's a really, really good question. So we don't have anything super formalized yet, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Some of my mindset goes to like, all right, what is the market share for actual Bitcoin custody? So like, are people using Mac? Are they using Windows or Linux? Right. And so it's great to target like the hardcore Bitcoiners and the hardcore plebs that have been in this space.
That's
like,
such a small sample size though.
It's a very small sample size. And for enterprises, it's completely different. Right. And so like a lot of our tech stack will be honestly aimed at Windows and then some server side logic.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that, you know, somebody who can already understand Bitcoin, who can code on one of these platforms really well,
mm-hmm.
and really motivated to build a career in Bitcoin, whether with Bronta for a long time or with Bronta even for a year or two, that's kind of the perfect candidate for us.
Got it. Okay. And when you're going to be interviewing people, are you specifically looking for a Bitcoiner? Like, is that like your North Star? Something that must have? Got it. Okay. Why do you think that people in the Bitcoin space prefer to hire Bitcoiners over just anyone else?
I mean, I think it's just a resource burn calculation.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I hire a Bitcoiner, I have to burn less resources working with them. Like they're closer to understanding the mission. I do not need to orange pill them. They can understand the product quicker.
Yeah.
We will not get hung up on altcoins or anything like this.
Okay. Got it. Yeah. That's a really good point. That's the first time I've ever heard it framed that way. Not a resource burn. So instead of having to invest in them for the education or maybe even help them unlearn some things, it's rather just they come ready to go.
Yeah. Like how you can think of this is like, as you walk through the grocery store or wherever you're walking through, like you can just view a, what's this thing? Like an hourglass. You can view an hourglass like floating above the head of everybody that says time until Bitcoiner. And some people have a lot of sand in the top half and some people are already there. So, you know, you get to build your team, right?
Yeah. And have you built teams in the past in your previous fiat jobs?
A bit, not like super formally. I did a fair bit of tech leading, which involved more of working with existing resources and kind of making like strategic picks from other teams and stuff like this.
Yeah. So I guess from that experience, how do you typically find good talent in the tech space?
Yeah. That's a really complicated question. And it's also kind of a cultural question. And it's very different too between Europe and the States, because in the States you actually can hire quicker and fire quicker, but in Europe you cannot fire quickly. So you cannot hire quickly. I really like that Bitcoin Talent Co. is having the contracting segment come out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I envision Bronta definitely leveraging Bitcoin Talent Co.'s contract like piece, because to me that seems like a very natural fit for a startup.
Yep.
But you know, finding talent, it's like, how big is the pool really? Like, maybe you go to meetups, maybe you go to BitDevs, maybe you go to conferences, and you're gonna get signal quick for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But like, good developers are very expensive too, and they're rare. So, you know.
Yeah, how do you think about maybe hiring a developer as a contractor versus bringing in someone on full time?
Yeah, I think that's different between a larger company, a funded company, and then kind of a bootstrapping company.
Right. So from your perspective.
Yeah, from my perspective, let's see. I mean, so you're asking like about just bringing on a developer full time?
Yeah, obviously you're going to need to bring on someone sooner rather than later. And how do you go about, what's your decision process there?
Yeah, you know, I think this is one of the beautiful parts of the open core model, where like by putting our designs out in the public and putting our technology out there, it's kind of just putting a job interview out. Like, you can go look at our GitHub right now, and there's open issues. Like the next work is already listed there. So if somebody comes along and contributes or even chimes in or like clones the repo and builds this and optimizes something, I mean, that's huge, right? So like, it's kind of just an opt-in to Bronta at this point. And our contributor to the Windows platforms thus far, Kyle, this is kind of what he did. Kyle and I knew each other from a Bitcoin meetup, which is very cool. It turns out he builds on C# and .NET. And I said, hey, well, I'm about to be building with Bronta on C# and .NET. And he just hopped in there. And so like, this particular relationship has worked very well so far, because he's getting kind of clout, right, from having his GitHub graph green, his name's on all the GitHub Bronta Windows platform.
Yep.
And he can use that as a resume piece, or he can probably turn that into a job offer from us. Like, from my perspective, hiring, you know, somebody like that who kind of comes in, adds value, gives feedback, brainstorms, it makes it so easy. And so this is one of the huge benefits of open core. And, you know, I think there's a lot of interesting intersections too between Bitcoin Talent Co. and even OpenSats here, because of the nature of the work, right?
You said OpenSats? Like the...
Yeah, even OpenSats, because like, you can kind of model after them on how like Bitcoin Core is open source. A lot of the Lightning projects are, and that's kind of the same thing, right? Like, the gate is open, and anybody that walks in and shows competence can probably eventually find compensation.
Yeah. And that's the crux of even why we have a business in general, because Bitcoiners are built that way. They will come in, they'll solve problems for you above any other industry, I think. So how are you thinking about, so if you're going to be hiring, let's just say, someone, another person or two, right? How are you thinking about budgeting for them? So I know you alluded to it's the contractor aspect, but if someone that's self-funded, how are you just going and planning for that?
Yeah, it's a little early for us right now, right? Because getting revenue like up to speed and deciding on what level of funding to take, and even like at the stage we're considering an accelerator to really boost like our progress. So for now, the budgeting is like a little bit ahead of us, to be honest. But I also think like, when that comes, depending on the person and the profile, like, you know, like an equity salary split makes sense. And from what I've seen among my friends and my peers who are leaving big tech into Bitcoin,
there's
definitely a willingness to, I don't want to say drop compensation, but working on something you care about is like very real. And I'm way happier working on Bitcoin than I would be working on something that's not Bitcoin. So I think that's also a factor.
Yeah, that's a really good point you bring that up too. Something we recently posted about is how our close rate or acceptance rate is so high compared to other recruiters and even just internal recruiters too. But I think it's because exactly what you just stated. It's because people are willing to take a drop in compensation to come work in the Bitcoin space. They're that eager to work in the industry and combine kind of their passion with their career.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, you know, if you started hacking on the iPhone in 2011, 12 even, come on, like that was the hottest ticket for a while.
Right.
And like the way I view it right now is like, if you drop your fiat job, if you drop your white collar gig and just walk into a conference or whatever Bitcoin space, people are going to receive that really well. And I think things will work out for you. That's been my experience. And also have a built-in advantage of about 5 years before like the wave comes, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. I definitely think putting yourself out there in the Bitcoin space, it dramatically improves your odds of at least landing an interview with these companies because they want to hire Bitcoiners. Related to that, what's a piece of advice you'd give to someone currently job seeking right now? Maybe they're technical, maybe they're not, but it's just something maybe it's not thought of a lot that they can do right now to put themselves in a good position to work in this industry.
Yeah. No, that's a really good question. I think that's very deep. So I don't know if we can fully answer it here. So if you're already a Bitcoiner and you're just thinking like these guys are rock stars, this is so cool. I think you have to know your risk tolerance and you should honestly just start. You should start contributing. And I don't know, honestly, any examples who kind of rose in the Bitcoin space in terms of prestige or contributions or impact that didn't just start making impact, right? Like the only way you get there, I think, is through contributing value. So that would be my advice. And, you know, kind of the conception story of Bronta starts with me trying to contribute kind of on the shoulders of Steve, who built UTX Oracle, who I've never even met, which is amazing. And out of that came Bronta. And honestly, like out of Bronta came Top Builder. So Bronta right now is competing with Pleb Labs Top Builder program. We're in round two. The pitch will be in March for the five teams that continue on. So we'll see what happens there. But like this connection came out of a conference, right? So at BitBlock Boom, like I met somebody there. So what I would say to anybody that wants to get into the space is like, be willing to spend money to make your dreams come true. Like if you want to talk to Bitcoiners, you need to go to where they're at. So go to Austin, go to Nashville, go to Madeira, wherever you need to be, and just start talking to people. And also know that like Bitcoin's a very, very small community. So, you know, your actions will be judged. And I think, I think there's less room for unethical behavior here than anywhere else that I've ever seen, which is a beautiful thing.
Yeah. It's Bitcoin's like self-reinforcing system just over and over again happening. And it's creating this pool of really talented people that also have high integrity, high ethics, and just creates a really good culture, I think, to work in. I'm going to go switch back to Bronta real quick. What's kind of like your outlook of Bronta, maybe in the next year or so, and then into like maybe 5-10 years from now?
Yeah, for sure. I think about this all the time. So I think, so the 5 to 10 year vision is we're going to most likely stay open core. And I think Bronta open core is going to trend toward the protocol paradigm. And it's just, I think it will be foolish not to use Bronta or something that does what Bronta does. I think the enterprise version of Bronta will be used for more sensitive situations and perhaps a more regulated, scrutinized environment. So you can imagine, right? Like we now have ETFs and there are individuals walking around today with like 8-9 figures of Bitcoin, right? And if you think about that layered concept of all these exploits that could happen, like why would you not pay for like a technical insurance, so to speak? So later down the line, there's going to be like a very elite version. There's going to be a very common open core version. And really, to get there in the next year, like, we need to not run out of money, because if your business runs out of money, you die, right? This is the truth.
At least the price of Bitcoin's going up. So maybe you have some little extra funds, fiat funds to deploy here.
Yeah, and that's kind of the shame too, but it's also the beautiful part that is self-reinforcing. So in the next year, you know, we will, we'll be looking at capital, we'll be looking at bringing on a couple hands full time, mm-hmm. and really, really making sure Bronte Core like does its job perfectly, is very easily accessible, and we'll build that reputation slowly. And also during this time, we will be kind of fleshing out like where exactly the enterprise model fits and like who the first buyers are. So yeah, that's where we are right now.
Got it. And for your current model right now, do you have like an estimated amount of users?
Yeah, this is actually like this is on my mind all the time. So the unfortunate answer is no. And so the reason for this is that being open source, we don't have any analytics in the software right now. So when you download and install Bronte Core, there's no phoning home. We don't track you. We don't have any network calls. We don't have any third party dependencies in the software. Mm-hmm. And so that's for purity reasons and security and trust reasons, right? But that's also terrible because we don't know how many instances of Bronte are running out there, which drives me nuts as the founder because I want metrics, right?
Right.
So what we do have website visits, and you know, probably we should put like a tracker on the download button on the website. Mm-hmm. I just haven't set it up yet.
Okay. Still early days here.
It's early, man, but it's super fun.
Yeah, I think it's still just important for listeners that are thinking about making a Bitcoin startup just to hear some of these struggles and some of the positive sides too of a startup. Cool. So as we wrap this up here, I'm curious, what's your outlook on Bitcoin over this next halving? So we have the halving about 2 months from now. What do you think is going to happen over these next 4 years into the next cycle in terms of price, in terms of adoption, and just everything altogether?
Yeah, you know, price gets a ton of focus, so I won't speak about that.
It's going to go up. Let's say that.
Yeah. I think the really hard part is the building. Like, mm-hmm. building this, scaling it. And one of the things that has shocked me the most since starting Bronte is the number of emails and calls I've been getting from strangers and friends saying they've had money stolen. Wow. It's blown me away. Completely, like just email after email. Hey, I lost $20,000 on this fake wallet. It's terrible to hear. It's like I'm hearing bad news all the time from people getting money stolen. And I think we might underestimate a little bit the maturity and the battle testing of the technology for payments and custody. Like, it's really hard, and a lot of people really just struggle to use their phone. And like, for these people to use money, it's very tough. And for Bitcoin to scale as like, what are we doing here? We're going from like a medium of exchange, like finally to a unit of account, right? Mm-hmm. That's going to be a tough process because it's not even about the technology. Like, even like once the technology does mature and get to the point of this is really solid, the people still need to come. Mm-hmm. And that's just a volume question. There's just so many humans on this planet walking around who just haven't had the time to study Bitcoin yet because they're doing amazing things in other fields. Mm. And so the next 10 years will be a story of just adoption and making a lot of these names household, you know, like a cold card. Like, that needs to be the new standard. Like, everybody needs to understand what cold card is. In Sparrow, there should probably be like 5 Sparrow alternatives realistically. Like, why is there only one Sparrow? Mm-hmm. And like, why is there only one Bronte? It's completely ridiculous if this is to really scale to hyper Bitcoinization. And like, people love to talk about like $1 million Bitcoin, but can you even hold on to it? It's like the biggest honeypot in the world. So I'm really focused on the tech adoption.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I'm just thinking of like how they're selling ledgers now in Best Buy in the US and retail stores. So if you're someone new to the Bitcoin space and you want to put a decent amount of money on it, go and use one of those ledgers, and it's not what you think it is. Whereas if you buy like a wallet that's built by Bitcoiners, Bitcoin only, you know that this thing was specifically designed to keep your fund safe. So I'd much rather trust that than something else. But a lot of the new people coming into the market won't understand that, and they'll probably get burnt too. Do you have any stats behind the amount of funds being stolen, maybe per year overall, or maybe the number of people have gotten funds stolen?
Yeah, this is kind of one of my side projects here. So I'm kind of aggregating just, you know, stories, I'll say. Not tied to any person, but I'm trying to get these numbers because I think it's in the billions, which is very sad. It's a huge number, and it's hard to track, right? Like, how do you measure when you prevent a theft? And so, like, this is actually one of our ideas is, like, with Bronto, like, you could actually measure and aggregate fake wallets in real time. So you could imagine, like, a global alerting network, right? Like, when Bronto is everywhere, if there's 100 million Bronto installs, you can actually do stuff with the data there. If you can track, hey, there's this malicious wallet running with this fingerprint installed, perhaps even from this IP. And then, like, you're in a very, very powerful position to annihilate threats in real time. So, yeah, measuring this is tough. That'll come. For now, yeah, the number's too large, and we need to reduce it.
Yeah, I mean, even dollars or 100 sats is too much, in my opinion. So, yeah, hopefully over time, like you said, that if this thing keeps growing and people adopt it, then you can really remove the ability for malicious actors to take funds from people.
Yeah,
so I'm hopeful there.
It just needs to be built. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hey, I'm on your team here, Keith. Looking forward to what you build over the next couple of years. Looking forward to using the software more. Where can people download Bronto, learn more about it, and then get in touch with you as well?
Yeah, sure. So we're at Bronto.pro is the website, and Bronto Ops is the Twitter handle. We're on Nostr as well. Love Nostr. We're going to be moving slowly more towards Nostr. But yeah, that's us.
Awesome. Well, looking forward to it, Keith. Good luck with everything here.
Yeah, this is fun, Eric. Thank you so much for the invite.
Yep.
Hey guys, thanks for listening, and I really hope you found value in this podcast. If you are a job seeker looking to work for a Bitcoin company, or you're a part of a Bitcoin company and need help with finding talent for your team, please head over to our website at www.bitcointalent.co and get in touch with our team. Thanks, until next time.